This week on the Northwest Politicast.
With political unrest becoming all too common here in the United States, will President Trump be allowed to deploy the military here?
Whether it's Seattle or Boise or any place in the Ninth Circuit, if you have a level of violence where the local folks can't handle it, yeah, the courts are probably going to say, we're on Trump's side. He has a right to send in troops.
Plus, Democrats sidelined by the big, beautiful bill.
Because the bill doesn't have this 60-vote threshold associated with it, Democrats don't have a lot of opportunities to try to shape the bill or to stop it from passing.
But they might have found a way around all of that with some obscure Senate rules. Also, how do we protect lawmakers when assassinations like what happened in Minnesota are happening more and more?
Personally identifiable information by law is not allowed to be released. Yet, because of the internet, because of search engines, all of that information is easily found.
And, as always, the lighter side of politics.
The Attorney General is proposing building a temporary ICE detention facility on a remote abandoned Air Force base in the Everglades.
I call it Alligator Alcatraz.
Now, here's Northwest News Radio's Jeff Pulcilla.
Well, as always, there is a lot to get to this week, but we begin with the federal courts. Well, an appeals court on Thursday allowed President Trump to keep control, at least for now, of the National Guard troops he's deployed to Los Angeles following protests over immigration raids. The decision halts a ruling from a lower court judge who found that Mr. Trump illegally acted when he activated the soldiers over opposition from California Governor Gavin Newsom. The deployment was the first by a president of a state National Guard without the governor's permission since 1965. In its decision, the court concluded that, quote, it is likely that the president lawfully exercised his statutory authority in federalizing control of the Guard. Joining us now to talk about this and some of the other legal issues that cropped up this week, ABC News legal analyst Royal Oaks, thank you so much.
You bet.
This didn't really come as a huge surprise with the appellate court siding with the administration, correct?
Yeah, you're right. And the reason for that is we read the tea leaves. We heard the oral argument the day before. And in that argument that went on for more than an hour, all three Ninth Circuit judges made it very clear they were on Trump's side. They felt that the president has very broad discretion in deciding whether the situation on the ground is bad enough to justify federalizing the state National Guard troops. The Newsom position, Governor Newsom of California, had been, no, absolutely not. You got to get my approval for this. And there's no rebellion. The statutes talk about a rebellion. Ninth Circuit wasn't buying it. They said, the LAPD said, we're out of here. We can't control the situation. Therefore, Trump wins.
Part of the argument that Gavin Newsom and company were making was over who gets to say what a rebellion is. Is that defined in law, or is it something for the president or the governor to determine? Because definitions in legal terminology really carry a lot of weight.
Well, absolutely, especially when you've got something like the word rebellion or uprising that does not have a clear definition. Now, you've got dozens or maybe hundreds of cases decided by the appellate courts over the many, many decades that help construe and describe what the meaning of these terms are. But in this case, there really wasn't a very clear explanation. So what the Ninth Circuit was left with was the fact that a lot of violence, you got some rocks and bottles flying and chunks of concrete, Molotov cocktails, one ICE agent had his wrist smashed. That's good enough for us. That qualifies as whatever you want to call it, a rebellion or an invasion or unrest. So, yeah, it's tough to define these vague terms, but it's like the Supreme Court justice can't define pornography, but he knows it when he sees it. The Ninth Circuit judges, maybe they can't define uprising, but they knew it when they saw it. This was justifiable by Donald Trump.
Extreme partisans like to say, well, the courts are either liberal justices or conservative justices, and the Ninth Circuit tends to be painted as a very liberal court. But this time they sided with what would be the conservative argument.
Yeah, and take a look at the three judges on that panel. They're picked at random out of 29 total Ninth Circuit judges. By chance, two of the three were Trump appointees, and one was a Biden appointee who was very antagonistic to Trump. This third Biden appointee, she said years ago, if you put Justice Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court, people are going to die in the streets. He's morally bankrupt. And yet, she joined the Trump appointees in this new decision out of the Ninth Circuit. Even she had to agree, yeah, the statute is written in such a way that I think the president has very broad discretion, and Trump wins this round.
Now, there's a lot of concern up here in the Seattle area, another very liberal city and a city known for protests and known for, at times, violent protests. Does this mean that Donald Trump can now deploy the National Guard to Seattle or any other Democratic-run city whenever he wants?
Well, not whenever he wants, and that's a key distinction. One of the bad news chunks of this dispute for Trump is that when the oral argument started in the Ninth Circuit, the Trump judges gave the Trump lawyer a hard time. They said, are you saying that he has absolutely total discretion if he says, well, I think Martians are going to come down and probe us all, so I'm going to authorize the National Guard? And the Trump lawyer said, well, yeah, read the statute. Absolutely no limits on his discretion. They weren't buying it. But it doesn't hurt Trump because there was enough violence in the streets. So to answer your question, whether it's Seattle or Boise or any place in the Ninth Circuit, if you have a level of violence where the local folks can't handle it, yeah, the courts are probably going to say, we're on Trump's side. He has a right to send in troops.
So what's the next step in this fight between Newsom and Trump?
Well, two parallel tracks. The Ninth Circuit decision by the three-judge panel may be appealed within the Ninth Circuit. If a majority of the 29 Ninth Circuit judges agree with Newsom that there should be an 11-judge big super panel to sink their teeth into this, then Newsom will get another hearing probably next week. And odds are he might win there because a lot of the Ninth Circuit judges, a majority of them, were appointed by Democrat presidents. The other parallel track is the trial court judge who got his hand slapped, who ruled against Trump initially. Now he's been overruled. He had a hearing today, and he is actually proceeding with additional briefing. And he may conclude that, doggone it, we have a principle in this country. You don't send the military in to do the cop's job. And therefore, he could rule again against Donald Trump. Of course, that would be appealable again to the Ninth Circuit.
We're talking about the National Guard at this point. What about the idea of deploying active duty Marines to ostensibly put down rioting by American citizens? Is that the same or is that any different based on the law?
Yeah, totally different. All of the judges who have looked at these issues over the last week or two have not gotten into the Marine question. And it's a big one because, for example, it's one thing to say to the Marines, okay, protect the federal building. It's another thing to say to the Marines, go accompany the ICE agents when they go to Dodger Stadium or go to the park or go to the car wash and they take down the undocumented aliens. That's something the judges have not ruled on. And in that case, Gavin Newsom could get a more receptive approach.
If memory serves, it's the Posse Comitatus Act. It prevents the U.S. military from being used for domestic policing purposes, correct?
Exactly. And that is a secret weapon by Gavin Newsom and the folks who are critical of Trump. It may be that we get a serious decision against Trump on that very basis in the next week or two.
The other case that popped up, and this happened on late Friday, a panel of three federal appellate judges ruled that a Louisiana law requiring the Ten Commandments to be posted in each of the state's public classrooms is unconstitutional. Now, President Trump was backing this law that was passed by Louisiana, a very conservative state, admittedly. But then you also had the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, a very conservative court by reputation, siding with the liberal argument.
Yeah, it's a tough call because, you know, the Constitution says you got to have separation of church and state. We can't establish a national religion. And a lot of judges, including the Supreme Court a few decades ago, have interpreted that to mean, you know, it's really hands off. We can't do anything that looks like we're endorsing religious principles or a particular religion. The other side of that coin is a lot of people say, well, but the Ten Commandments, you know, it isn't so much religious. It's just part of our history. It's just part of our ethos in this country. And so why not let schools post it up on the wall? You know, it's not like we're indoctrinating kids. And some judges have gone along with that. But in this decision you're reporting on, a normally conservative Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals is saying, you know, nice try. It's just too close to foisting religion on kids, and therefore it's just not permitted.
Before we let you go, we're just days away from the wrapping up of the Supreme Court's term, and this is where we tend to see some of the biggest decisions handed down. And we also see retirements from Supreme Court justices. What are we expecting to hear out of the court in the next couple of days and weeks?
Well, several more cases remain. One has to do with the Texas law that says, hey, if you want to go to a pornography website, that's fine, but you have to prove you're 18 years of age. That is up for before the U.S. Supreme Court. The other big decision is, may parents take their kids out of a school program or curriculum, opt out where LGBTQ inclusive books and materials are in elementary schools? So the Supreme Court will look at that as well. As for retirements, yeah, it's always, it'd be nice to have a crystal ball. And you can bet that none of the three justices on the Supreme Court who are liberal are going to be retiring, no matter what their personal situation, because they really don't want to be replaced by Donald Trump.
And I guess the money, if anyone's going to be hanging it up, it would probably be Clarence Thomas, one of the most conservative, if not the most conservative justice, and the oldest one on the court.
Well, that's right. But, you know, he's been through a lot, taken a lot of fire in recent years about his wife being such an activist and demands for recusal, and doesn't seem to show any signs of slowing down. So I guess I'd be surprised if Clarence Thomas decided to call it a career.
All right, ABC News legal analyst Royal Oaks, thank you so much.
You bet, thanks.
From Trump Steaks to Trump Mobile, the president's family launches a phone for the MAGAs.
When the Northwest Politicast returns after this. Each weekend here on Northwest News Radio, we bring you the inspiring stories that make our region so special. From local heroes making a difference.
We provide service dogs to adults, children, and veterans.
To the uplifting moments happening across the Northwest.
Over 187 artists have shown their work.
I'm Bill Schwartz. Join me as we highlight some of the people and organizations doing good in our community.
Puget Sound Now, Sunday mornings at 7 and anytime, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Northwest Politicast. I'm Jeff Poggiola. Well, in an event in New York City on Monday, the Trump Organization announced it's getting into the telecommunications market with, wait for it, Trump Mobile, a phone that promises the same coverage as the three nationwide phone service carriers, but it's far from the only mobile network with a major name attached to it, but raising a number of regulatory concerns. Joining us now to talk about this is ABC News tech reporter Mike Dubusky from New York, and we'll get to the legal and ethical implications in just a moment, but first, tell me about this Trump Mobile phone, which is, of course, golden.
Of course it is. Yes. So this is a pretty standard mid-range Android phone from what we can gather by the basic specs outlined on the Trump Mobile website. It is called the T1. The full name is actually T1 phone 8002 gold version. That seems to imply that there's a non-gold version, but we don't really have any information on that. It has a 6.8-inch screen, a 120Hz refresh rate, 50-megapixel main camera, and a pretty big battery, 5,000 milliamp hours. So far, pretty much what you would expect at this price point in the Android space. But once you dig a little deeper, Jeff, there are some question marks that begin to arise. For one, under the specification section, there is a processor and RAM sort of component to all of this, which lists the storage for this phone as 12 gigabytes of RAM. Well, RAM is different from storage. They're two different things. So it seems like some wires were crossed there. Also, when this website first went live, it advertised a 5,000 milliamp hour camera. Milliamp hours are used to describe batteries. So there's some sort of question marks exactly around some of the specifications. But that if that is not enough to dissuade potential people who are in the market for this, they can plunk down $100 to reserve the device, and it is $500 altogether. But Jeff, there is some question mark around that price as well. The Trump Organization says they plan to build this phone here in the United States. There is no infrastructure to do that. We don't build really any smartphones in the United States. There's no factories or suppliers to facilitate that, which means that the Trump Organization and Trump Mobile would have to spin that up themselves. That costs a lot of money. And, you know, will that, you know, change the price of this thing? I think that's something that we're just going to have to wait and see. For right now, no one has really played around with this phone just yet, in to the degree that the image they have on the website appears to be computer generated, right? It has a sort of three camera array similar to an iPhone, but there's no flash there. So that kind of leads us to believe that this is CGI to some degree. But even still, they say the status is coming soon. What that means in reality, I think, kind of remains to be seen.
Whether it's the golden phone or anything else that the Trump Organization has done, there's also a lot of ethics considerations here, because the Trump family is profiting off the presidency, or at least is accused of profiting off of Donald Trump's presidency here. What are some of those concerns?
Yeah, so for one, this is phone, but it is also a phone plan. Trump Mobile also offers what they call the 47 plan. It is what's known as an MVNO. It's basically a small version of a cell phone provider. These MVNO companies are similar to like Mint Mobile, if you're familiar with the Ryan Reynolds commercials, or Cricket Wireless. This is kind of where Trump Mobile plays, and it would be under the regulatory scrutiny of Brendan Carr, the FCC commissioner. He is a Trump appointee. He has, in his short tenure at the FCC, largely been in line with President Trump's policies around the FCC and what that organization should be aimed at doing. But given that now there is a Trump-branded mobile phone service provider on the market, he is tasked with both regulating that market and reporting to his boss, who again has the same name, right? He has his name on this company. So that is a real ethical quandary that should face Brendan Carr. For what it's worth, these smaller network providers, they kind of piggyback off of the larger providers. The Trump Mobile network doesn't have any infrastructure of its own. It, you know, uses or borrows from T-Mobile and Verizon and AT&T. So it should offer similar coverage to those companies. And generally speaking, when we talk about Mint Mobile or Cricket Wireless or any of these companies, they're not huge players in the telecom space. They only make up a small percentage of the market share there. It's really dominated by those big three, T-Mobile, AT&T, and Verizon customers. But even still, that is an ethical quandary on its face. You mentioned the sort of Trump family garnering money from this enterprise. We don't exactly know how successful it's going to be, of course, but you know, there's the potential for them to make some money off of this, and it is the Trump name at the end of the day, and that is an ethical quandary as well. Even still, they are leaning into the presidential connection. Trump Mobile goes for $47.45 a month, which are significant numbers for the Trump administration and Donald Trump himself. For what it's worth, too, that's a little bit more expensive than what you would get from Mint Mobile and from Cricket Wireless. The Trump Mobile plan offers unlimited talk, text, and data, nationwide coverage, international calling, and other perks that they say kind of justify that slightly higher price. Things like roadside assistance and telehealth benefits as well.
And I would think, too, that they're really targeting this built-in market of MAGA Nation that buys the red hats and buys all the Trump flags and now the golden phone.
Yeah, this is for Trump fans, no question. And it's not the first time we've seen a technology company like this, and even a smartphone manufacturer, cater to this market. A few years ago, there was a company called the Freedom Phone that purported to sell a conservative-minded smartphone that had an American flag on it. It was meant to protect your data and keep you safe, and they had a whole marketing push behind it. It's not a very successful phone, in no small part because it was, at its core, a Chinese device that was imported into the United States and then marked up for a cost with some, you know, America-focused branding on it. From at least the specs that we see, does seem like that is what the T1 Trump phone is. It kind of runs counter to their claim that they plan to build this in the United States. There's also some lack of clarity about when exactly that's going to happen. Don Jr. at one point said that it's going to be built in the United States. Eric Trump has said eventually it will be built in the United States. Like, that's their roadmap. So in the short term, it might be an imported device. But again, this is all speculation. These are all questions that we just don't really know the answer to. Even still, not the first time we've seen something like this. It is the first time we've seen something like this with a president's name on it.
So I guess the big risk for the Trump organization and the Trump family is this going to be like the Trump Steaks, Trump Ice, the Trump University, all of those failed business products that the family has pushed over the years?
That is certainly a concern, right? For the Trump organization, that they've had a number of these sort of business ventures where they've taken the Trump name and put it on an existing product and sold it at a markup that has kind of crashed and failed. In addition to that, there's a sort of foreign influence question here as well. The Trump organization runs the Trump Media and Technology Group as well, which runs Truth Social, which is the president's sort of social network, very similar to X, Twitter, those types of services. And the concern there is that there could be major investment in these companies from any number of foreign governments, maybe seeking to influence the president and his decision making through the rest of his term. So will this be part of the Trump Media and Technology Group? Will this be its own thing that investors can put money into? That's going to be something to keep a close eye on. And you can imagine watchdogs are going to be paying very close attention to.
All right, ABC News tech reporter Mike Dubusky, thank you so much.
Of course, Jeff. Take care.
Coming up next.
What exactly is a bird bath, and how could it sink the president's big, beautiful bill?
When the Northwest Politicast continues after this.
In these divided times, where can you go to get both sides of the story? Not just the left.
Democracy itself is at stake.
Not just the right.
The conservatives in this state are making the best case right now.
When politicians talk.
I'm joined by Washington State Governor Jay Inslee.
Jim Walsh, chairman of the Washington State Republican Party.
They talk to Jeff, the Northwest Politicast with Jeff Pogula. Weekends on Northwest News Radio and anytime wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Northwest Politicast. I'm Jeff Pogula.
Rubber ducky, you're the one.
Oh, why are we playing Ernie and his rubber ducky? Because, well, the topic of this segment is bird baths. No, we're not talking about avian grooming. We're talking about the obscure parliamentary procedure that threatens to derail President Trump's big, beautiful bill. And with an intro like that, it could only mean it's time to get into the weeds with Capitol Hill correspondent Ali Pakurin, who joins us from Washington, D.C. Ali, thank you so much.
Warned me that's what you were about to do. That's hilarious.
So what are we talking about here? First, for those who don't know, what is a bird bath?
Yeah. So what you're referencing is this Senate procedure that's named after a former senator, Robert Byrd, and he is the one that created these rules of the road for passing what's called a reconciliation bill. So we've talked about this before, but the big, beautiful bill is trying to be passed under this Senate procedure called reconciliation. It allows Republicans, because they are the party in power right now, to pass this bill without any Democratic buy-in, basically allowing them to skirt around the Senate filibuster rules that normally require 60 votes to pass most legislation. But there are rules associated with that. If you want to use this procedure, if you want to use reconciliation, everything that you do has to be in some way related to the budget. And so the process of reviewing this massive bill to determine whether or not everything fits into that rule, is it actually relevant to the budget, that's undertaken by the Senate parliamentarian. And that process of review is sometimes referred to sort of cheekily on Capitol Hill as the bird bath, because it's the bird rule. It's spelled B-Y-R-D, though, so you got to be a little careful.
Oh, so what exactly is this threatening to do with the big, beautiful bill here? Because this is what a lot of lawmakers would term an omnibus bill. There's all sorts of things, Christmas tree bills, different policies attached to it and all of that. But it also includes a fair amount of government taxing and spending. So what's it threatening to cleanse out of this bill?
So because the bill doesn't have this 60-vote threshold associated with it, Democrats don't have a lot of opportunities to try to shape the bill or to stop it from passing. This birdbath is Democrats' opportunity to get in there and try to block out things that they don't like in this bill. And Democrats have said they're going to come to play. They're being very aggressive and trying to strip out a lot of provisions that they don't like. The only way they can do that is by arguing that these things are not related to the budget. There are certain things that are pretty obviously related to the budget that Democrats might not like, but are going to be pretty hard to challenge. Things like tax policy, pretty difficult to challenge. But Republicans have peppered this bill with a lot of policy measures, too, some that Democrats are making an effort to challenge. Today, we've already learned that the Senate parliamentarian Elizabeth McDonough stripped out a provision that Republicans had put in there trying to zero out funding for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And over the weekend, we'll have to keep our eye out to see if more of those provisions are struck out. And it's very possible that there could be a lot of things that are being looked at. There's regulation in the bill related to artificial intelligence that Democrats are going after. There's also some provisions related to federal judges that Democrats say flies far outside the rules of reconciliation. So a number of things left to keep an eye out for. Republicans are still hoping to get this bill moving across the Senate floor next week. So everybody is paying a lot of attention to this rather obscure process right now.
And all of this with a self-imposed deadline that's less than 2 weeks away of July 4th.
Yeah, that's right. So the Senate is expected to move on this thing sometime this week, assuming that Republican leader John Thune believes that he has the votes. Republican leader Thune, he was the whip before he stepped into this leadership role. And the one thing that we know about him is he does not put bills on the floor to fail. So if this bill is on the floor this week, you can expect that it means that the bill is going to pass. It is very unlikely that someone would buck him so publicly in a very public manner in front of everyone. But you never do know. There are a number of people in the Senate right now, a number of Republicans that we're keeping an eye on who are still not happy with the way that the bill looks. Thune can only afford to lose three Republicans when it gets to crunch time. And then this thing has got to go back to the House. You'll remember Speaker Johnson passed it by the skin of his teeth to send it over to the Senate. There are already some House Republicans that are taking a lot of umbrage with some of the changes that the Senate has implemented. So we'll have to see if the Senate can get it over to the House, whether the House still can pass this thing. And that's where President Trump is going to have to really get involved in pushing them, because President Trump wants this on his desk. He's the one that's going to be able to sort of exert that pressure to get his folks in line.
Well, and with the one vote margin in the House, that's going to be a tall order. But as you said before, even that, you've got to pass the Senate. And it seems like the one person who's been making noise about the bill this week has been Senator Rand Paul.
Senator Rand Paul is almost certainly going to vote against this thing unless it changes pretty dramatically between now and when it hits the floor. And his biggest issue with this bill is that it has a provision in it to raise the federal debt limit. Now, that is something that Congress has to do before the end of the summer, early fall, or we risk defaulting on our debt, which could have a pretty extreme economic fallout. Congress raises the debt limit every few years. It's a whole debate every time this happens. And Republicans have decided to include this in the bill because otherwise raising the debt limit would require some Democratic buy-in, and Democrats could, in theory, leverage that for something that they might want from Republicans. Republicans are trying to avoid that, so they've included the debt limit hike in this giant, one big, beautiful bill. But Senator Paul has never voted to raise the debt limit. He has very, very hard along and very long felt beliefs about raising the federal debt limit. He doesn't like to do it. He doesn't think it should be done. He's a deficit hawk. And so he says he's going to vote against the bill unless that debt limit language is removed. The other senators that have issues with this bill, I think, can be won over through varying provisions. But there are a few who are still raising very serious concerns about how much this bill costs. And there are some concerns about the way that the Medicaid provisions have been drafted in here as well.
In addition to Rand Paul, there's also Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins, the two sort of swing voters, the moderate members of the Republican caucus. There's three right there. If he loses one more, then the bill is toast. So is there any other Republican who is maybe holding up this bill, holding it hostage for some provision that they want?
Yeah, so that's right. We still don't technically know what Collins and Murkowski will do with this bill. They haven't publicly stated one way or another, but we do know that Collins has some concerns about the Medicaid provisions. Vice President J.D. Vance was on Capitol Hill earlier this week, and he told reporters that he had been meeting with Collins one-on-one to sort of talk through those provisions. There's a possibility that she could be won over. And as you and I have discussed before, she is often a person who objects until it's time to cast the final vote and can sometimes change her mind. But there are a few other Republicans on Capitol Hill that we should all be keeping an eye on right now. Chief among them is Senator Ron Johnson. He has a pretty serious issue with the cost of this bill, and he says that it's still too much spending and not enough savings for him to support the package. I kind of think he could be won over, but right now he says that it's going to be difficult for him to support this. Also a person to watch, Senator Josh Hawley from Missouri, has a lot of issues with the Medicaid provisions, particularly legislation or language in the legislation that changes the provider tax rate and makes it lower. He has a lot of concerns that changing that tax rate will negatively impact rural hospitals in states like his.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. In the Weeds with Ali Pekoran from Capitol Hill. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Still to come.
In the aftermath of last week's political assassinations in Minnesota, lawmakers are starting to rethink their own security.
When the Northwest Politicast returns after this.
Each weekend here on Northwest News Radio, we bring you the inspiring stories that make our region so special. From local heroes making a difference.
We provide service dogs to adults, children, and veterans.
To the uplifting moments happening across the Northwest.
Over 187 artists have shown their work.
I'm Bill Schwartz. Join me as we highlight some of the people and organizations doing good in our community.
Puget Sound Now, Sunday mornings at 7 and anytime, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Northwest Politicast. I'm Jeff Pogula. Now to the fallout of the political assassinations last week in Minnesota. Vance Bolter is in federal custody facing murder and stalking charges in the shooting death of former Democratic House Speaker Melissa Hortman and her husband. Authorities say he also shot and wounded Senator John Hoffman and his wife Yvette. Bolter, 57 years old, also faces state murder charges. And this is also launching a number of proposed changes in how lawmakers are secured in their homes and how that information is kept from public view. Joining us now is ABC News analyst and former senior Secret Service agent Don Mihalik. And Don, we'll put it to you first, because you've spent a lifetime protecting VIPs. How do you protect someone in their own home from someone like this?
It's a definite challenge, but a lot of it comes down to basic security and safety protocols that I think a lot of people forget about because everybody feels safe in their homes. I think in this day and age, if you're a lawmaker or a public official, investing in Ring doorbells, security cameras, alarm systems, that type of thing should be part and parcel of a home. Following basic security procedures, don't open the door unless you can hug and kiss somebody. You know, if somebody's knocking on your door at 2 or 3 in the morning, even if it looks official, don't open the door until you can verify who they are. If you're out doing public events, make sure there's some distance between you and the public. Have a police officer there. Make sure you're trying to control who's coming up towards you or what you're interacting with, and having just general situational awareness and knowing what's around you. And the other piece is not falling into the trap of doing the same thing the same way each and every day, varying schedules so nobody can get a schedule lock on you.
The other thing we're seeing too is some legislation that would protect the home addresses of lawmakers, and we're no stranger to that here in the Seattle area, where former Mayor Jenny Durkan was a federal prosecutor. Her address was protected, and that was released in a series of protests, and that's a separate story in and of itself. But what legislation can be passed to protect the lawmakers and our elected officials from being targeted in their own homes?
So personally identifiable information, PII information, by law is not allowed to be released. Yet because of the internet, because of search engines, all of that information is easily found in different corners. And you've got search engines that collect all that information. And then if you want to pay for it, you can actually get an entire report of somebody's entire background, who their families are, addresses and whatnot. That needs to stop, not only for lawmakers. We've seen police officers swatted. We've seen ICE agents swatted, federal agents swatted, whose information gets out there. Congress at this point needs to act, and they need to make sure that personally identifiable information is protected, that the internet is barred from releasing it, and that it is scrubbed from the internet. I think Florida has taken a step in that direction, and they've passed a law, and it's awaiting the governor's signature to protect lawmakers. But to me, every American deserves the same protection, because back in the old days, if you wanted to be on the unpublished list in a phone book, your name didn't appear in a phone book, so nobody could find your name and your address and your phone number. We don't have that option these days, and we need that option back.
But how can you do that in the age of the internet? You can't really scrub information once it's out there.
Well, you can, and cyber companies have the capability to do it. It's about making the investment to do it, because let's face it, your information, my information, it's worth money. All these places sell lists. They sell information, customer lists, home address lists and whatnot. That's how come people get these unsolicited phone calls and mail at home, credit cards, bank loans, everything else that you've never asked for. And even on the internet, if you go onto Google or one of the search pages, all of a sudden, if you search for something, the next time you go on that search engine, unless you have it really locked down, ads start popping up. So that is all information that's being collected and being sold, and in some cases sold on the dark web. And Congress needs to force the internet companies, the cyber companies, to stop that and to protect that valuable information that right now they're making billions of dollars off of, namely your and my home address and phone number.
How do you even enforce something like that? Because, as you said, that would take a Herculean task and cost a lot of money.
Well, it would cost the cyber companies a lot of money. On the federal side, like a lot of federal statutes, it would be something that the federal agencies could enforce, or the FEC could enforce. But it is a step I think we need to take as a nation, because otherwise we're going to continue to see this free release of information and continually targeting. What's next? Now, if you say something on radio and somebody doesn't like it, they're going to find your home address and show up at your home. Whereas in the past, they would have had to actually maybe come to the radio station, look for you, watch you, follow you, and figure out where you're going. Now they can just do it with a click of a mouse. we've gone too far the other direction from the old days of a phone book, and you could have your number unpublished.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. Don Mihalik, former senior Secret Service agent, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And finally this week, the lighter side of politics with Zach Wildfang, and from golden burner phones to drunken pundits, there's a lot of humorous stuff out there. What's happening?
Well, Jeff, first off, apparently Florida's going to build a moat.
Okay. It's already surrounded by
a
moat.
That's what I said to one of our coworkers. Florida is a moat, but they're going to build, allegedly, the attorney general is proposing building a temporary ICE detention facility on a remote abandoned Air Force base in the Everglades.
Okay.
And so here's his proposition.
I call it Alligator Alcatraz.
I thought Alligator Alcatraz was a nickname the media was giving it, sort of like a taco sort of a thing. I thought it was a rumored. And then when I was pulling audio for this segment, I realized that, nope, James Utmeyer, the Attorney General of Florida, put this video out himself.
You don't need to invest that much in the perimeter. People get out, there's not much waiting for them other than alligators and pythons. Nowhere to go, nowhere to hide.
Could anything be more panhandle Florida than that?
I don't think so. I do
Good
not think
grief.
So. So we'll see if that ends up getting built.
What else you got?
Well, as we are all aware, there was a bit of a parade on Saturday.
Yes. Well, this, depending on when you're listening, last weekend, not this weekend, the military parade in Washington, D.C., celebrating the 250th birthday of the U.S. Army, and ostensibly, but it was also critics saying President Trump's birthday parade.
Sure. And during the festivities, it's probably comes as no surprise that Fox News was doing quite a bit of coverage around this event. And they had a lot of different voices come on during it was a long parade, festivities. This goes into the evening. So at this point in their broadcast, they have brought, two of the anchors have brought on military analyst Rebecca Koffler to the show to give her insights as to what she thought the, parade signaled. And this is how she enters the show.
With us now is former Defense Intel Agency officer Rebecca Koffler. Rebecca, what are your thoughts tonight on the incredible symbolism and the messaging that we saw here tonight from the Commander-in-Chief on the Army's 250th birthday?
I am so excited, Emily and Lucas Tomlinson.
Which is not the anchor
everybody,
she's talking to.
Like, this is incredible. Finally, the United States is back.
Boy, she has had a few celebrating that parade, hasn't
she?
Yeah,
I think she had some pops, I think, probably. They cut her off. They give her the old, Grammy Awards, shut down her microphone.
Play the music
off. Of a thing. So this is how she exits the broadcast.
And I want to thank these officers for all of the sacrifices and all of the hardships that their families have been doing. Lawrence Jones, you're rocking, man.
She finally got the anchor right.
you guys in prayer, Lucas.
Thank you.
I want to thank.
We're
thank
up against
you
the
so much.
Yeah, we gotta go.
Your service too. Well,
and she continues to talk. You know, the first thing you learn in TV is when you're on camera, don't wear anything that will distract from the story that you're telling. The second thing that you learn in TV, don't be drunk when you go on the air.
Well, someone tell Anderson Cooper that one. Oh, man, Jeff. Well, there's one more story that was getting a whole bunch of attention earlier in the week with the release of the Trump Mobile Service and T1 phone. First of all, you can make a $100 down payment to a $500 phone, status coming soon, with no release date in sight. The image of the
phone is a cheap phone.
It's a cheap, well, it looks like a cheap phone. The image appears to be generated or I'm not going to say it's AI, but it seems to be a manufactured image of the phone.
Not an actual picture of something that's been manufactured.
Exactly. It looks like, honestly, it looks like they took some stock photos of an Apple phone, tweaked it a little bit, and they're calling that good. I mean, you can see, like, the camera lenses are like stickers over. There's no shadow. There's no dimension. It's very two-dimensional image of this
very
phone.
Very flat.
Yeah, and it says it runs the Android 15 operating system, right? Well, Android's already on Android 16.
Wow.
And this phone's not even out yet.
This is part of the Trump organization, so this is not technically run by the president. It's run by his two sons.
Well,
and
allow me to read you the disclaimer at the bottom of the website.
Okay.
Because on all these Trump products, those to me are the most entertaining.
Okay, the disclaimers.
The disclaimers are great because it covers them so much and pretty much assures you're not getting anything you think you're getting. So Trump and all associated designs and trademarks of yada, yada, yada is products and services are not designed, developed, manufactured, distributed, or sold by the Trump Organization or any of their respective affiliates or principals. And it goes on to say that, you know, basically...
Translation, they just slapped his name on a product.
Exactly. So
it's branding. It's marketing. It's, well, they're not building it themselves.
If you have any questions, call 888-TRUMP45.
Of course, it's a gold phone because everything he does is golden.
There's one option.
Yep.
Take it or leave it.
Is this going to turn out to be like Trump steaks and Trump vodka and Trump University?
Yet to be seen, Jeff.
Yeah, all right. All right.
Can you hear me now?
We'll see.
All right. Can you hear me now?
Zach Wildfang, Lighter Side of Politics, thank you so much.
I'll call you back, Jeff.
And that'll do it for this episode of the Northwest Politicast. If you like the show, please leave a rating and a review in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And for more, be sure to check out our other shows, including Puget Sound Now with Bill Swartz. That's available at nwnewsradio.com or on your favorite podcast app. And remember, we're always streaming 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, on the Northwest News Radio app. Just look for it in the App Store or the Google Play Store. I'm Jeff Pogela. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.